Welcome to the Shortwave Report for February 24th, 2012. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's www.outfarpress.com, you can find a schedule for dozens of international broadcasters in English. There you can also listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK World Radio Japan, China Radio International, Radio Havana Cuba, Spanish National Radio, and Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. We'll begin with NHK World Radio Japan. The last nuclear reactor in western Japan has been shut down for inspection. The 2 remaining nuclear reactors in the country will be shut down by late April. More than 40% of the citizens in the regions near the Fukushima plant were exposed to radiation beyond the annual safety limit. Media was allowed to be near the Fukushima reactors for the first time this week. Cement is being laid atop the seabed offshore the Fukushima power plant to stop the radioactive materials from spreading at sea. The United States says it may begin arming anti-government demonstrators in Syria. NHK Japan.
The last nuclear reactor in western Japan has been shut down for regular inspections. Kansai Electric Power Company, the operator, said it completed the shutdown procedures for the number 3 reactor at the Takahama nuclear power plant in Fukui Prefecture about 3:50 a.m. on Tuesday. Now only 2 of Japan's 54 nuclear reactors are running. But those 2, one in the central prefecture of Niigata and the other in the northern prefecture of Hokkaido, will be shut down by late April. The Nuclear Industrial and Safety Agency earlier endorsed the first stage stress test results of the number 3 and number 4 reactors at the Oi nuclear plant, also in Fukui. The central government said it would approve restarting them if they clear the first phase. But the Nuclear Safety Commission said on Monday a second stage test with more detailed criteria is necessary to accurately assess the risks. The government received the initial test results from the 16 reactors, including the Oi plant, but it has not made a final decision on restarting them based on the findings. No local governments have agreed to restart nuclear plants in their region.
Japan's Nuclear Safety Agency has been criticized by its own panel of experts for rushing to approve stress tests for halted nuclear reactors. The Nuclear and Industrial Safety Agency last week gave its first nod of approval for the test results on 2 reactors at the Oi nuclear plant in western Japan. The agency reached the conclusion after cutting off debate by the panel of experts days earlier. At the panel's meeting on Monday, Professor Emeritus Hiromitsu Ino of the University of Tokyo said discussions hadn't been exhausted and he feels deceived. Masashi Goto, a lecturer at the Shibaura Institute of Technology, said the panel's job is to fully review plant safety to prevent another nuclear accident. Goto said he cannot understand why the agency was rushing to reach a conclusion. A nuclear safety official responded that the experts had met 8 times since November. He said the agency had met conditions to endorse the results. Having a stress test approved is a key step for restarting the country's nuclear reactors. Most of them were halted for regular inspections after the March 11th disaster.
More than 40% of the people surveyed in 3 municipalities near the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant were exposed to radioactivity levels above the annual safety limit in the 4 months after the disaster. Fukushima Prefecture released on Monday the results of its survey of external radioactive exposure among some 9,750 residents of 2 towns and a village after the accident last March. This number excluded people working in places with high radioactivity, such as a nuclear plant. Participants were asked about their behavior over a 4-month period immediately following the nuclear accident in order to estimate their external exposure. 42% of the respondents are estimated to have received more than 1 millisievert, the annual limit for the general public in the 4 months following the disaster. Estimated exposure exceeded 10 millisieverts for 71 people. The highest dose was 23 millisieverts for an adult woman. Among young people under the age of 20 at the time of the accident, the highest exposure was 18.1 millisieverts over 4 months. The prefecture is conducting the survey on all its 2 million residents.
Tokyo Electric Power Company has given members of the media access to the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant for the first time since the government declared 2 months ago that reactors there had been stabilized. The utility gave reporters a bus tour of the facility on Monday. The bus passed by reactor cooling systems and spent fuel pools where 43 incidents of water leaks have occurred since January. Workers have swathed pumps on trucks with sheets and wrapped pipes with insulation materials to prevent leaks. Reporters were allowed to get off the bus on a hill near the number 4 reactor and see firsthand the building, which was damaged by a hydrogen blast last March. Radioactivity levels on the hill are now 50 microsieverts per hour. Anyone spending the day there would be exposed to more than 1 millisievert of radiation, the annual limit for the general public.
Tokyo Electric Power Company will begin cementing the seabed near the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant to prevent radioactive materials from spreading at sea. On Wednesday, the utility plans to start pouring cement and clay over a 70,000 square meter area near the water intakes of the plant's 6 reactors. The seabed is about 6 meters deep. The company says a 60-centimeter layer on the seabed will prevent the spread of contaminated mud and sand for about 50 years. Extremely high levels of radioactive cesium have been detected in the area. The cesium mainly came from melted nuclear fuel rods from 3 of the reactors and contaminated water that leaked into the sea. There is growing concern that ships will scatter the contaminated sand when work begins to retrieve the fuel rods in several years' time. Tokyo Electric will start full-scale application of the cement in late February and hopes to complete the task in 4 months. The United States says it may consider support measures such as arming anti-government demonstrators in Syria to prevent the violence in the country from becoming prolonged. White House Press Secretary Jay Carney told reporters on Tuesday that there is an intense level of violence in Syria because of the brutal attacks by the country's forces against its own people. Carney said President Bashar al-Assad's regime is gradually losing control of parts of the country. He added that the United States still believes Syria needs a political solution, but that it does not rule out additional measures the international community may take to ensure that Assad steps aside for a peaceful democratic transition.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan, heard from 9 to 9:30 p.m. at 6110 or on the web at www.nhk.or.jp. All the times I'm announcing are for Pacific Standard Time, so adjust them to your time zone. Next, China Radio International. China is urging the Syrian government and rebels to cease all violence against civilians and disagrees with the idea of other countries arming opposition forces. China says that the veto of the UN resolution against Syria was not a result of partiality, but of considering what is best for the Syrian people. The mayor of Nagoya, Japan, denies that the rape of Nanking occurred in 1937, angering Chinese people. The Chinese firm Great Wall Motors is to begin having their autos assembled in Bulgaria. China wants Israel to accept a reconciliation between the Palestinian factions of Fatah and Hamas. China Radio International.
The Chinese special envoy is urging the Syrian government and political factions in the country to end all acts of violence against civilians. Chinese Vice Foreign Minister Zhai Jun has been visiting Syria and meeting with the country's government and opposition leaders. Zhai Jun says China backed Syria's President Bashar al-Assad's plan for a referendum on February 26, followed by multi-party elections, to resolve the current political crisis. The opposition and the West have dismissed the plan as a sham. Russia and China vetoed a UN Security Council resolution earlier this month calling on Assad to quit and also voted against a similar non-binding General Assembly resolution. Amid widespread reports of a deteriorating situation in Syria over the past few days, the international community is now jockeying to find a quick end to the violence. The Chinese government is pleading for calm amid reports that some countries are considering providing weapons to Syrian opposition forces. At the same time, demands for a probe are being put out following the deaths of two journalists in the restive city of Homs. A French photographer and an American journalist have been killed after their media centre was hit by a bomb. At least two other journalists have reportedly been injured in the same incident.
Wu Zeke says China's decision to veto two UN resolutions on Syria is not partial to a certain side. China has also been taking the Syrian people's interests into consideration.
We made the decisions based on China's peaceful diplomatic policies. We are still concerned about the situation in that region. We hope the unrest there could be solved through dialogue, and that's our policy. If big conflicts were to break out in the region, military conflicts, for example, it would be a huge disaster for the people involved, the region involved, and it would have a negative impact on the world peace as well.
Meantime, Wu Zeke has also told CRI that China's vetoes are to protect the interest of developing countries.
When we bring the Syrian issue to the United Nations, we need to first make sure it will comply with the UN principles, one of which is to not to interfere with other countries' internal affairs. If this principle was broken, it would be dangerous for the international community in the future, because whenever an opposition starts in a country, other countries would then have a reason to interfere, and that would make the problem more complicated. So China needs to keep that principle.
Wu Zeke says the stance is also supported by Syrian's opposition groups. Wu says opposition leaders have told him that they are against foreign military interference in Syria. Instead, Wu suggests China maintains its position that Syria should end all acts of violence against civilians and should resort to peaceful means to solve the crisis. A stance, Wu says, is shared by the Arab League.
China still emphasizes the importance of the Arab League to solve the Syrian issues and some regional issues as well, and that stance has not been changed.
Wu Zeke says relations between China and the Arab League would not change after China vetoed the two resolutions tabled by the League. For CRI, I'm Shen Chengcheng.
The city of Nanjing has announced it's suspending all official exchanges with the Japanese city of Nagoya. The move comes following comments from Nagoya's mayor. It's being reported that Kawamura Takashi told a visiting Chinese official from Nanjing that the Nanjing massacre, quote, probably never happened. The Chinese Foreign Affairs Ministry has since issued a statement saying Takashi's comments have hurt the feelings of the people of Nanjing. The Nanjing massacre, also known as the Rape of Nanking, involved the rape and murder of an estimated 300,000 people in Nanjing during the height of the Japanese occupation of the former Chinese capital in December of 1937. Great Wall Motors has now launched operations in Bulgaria, becoming the first Chinese automaker to assemble cars in the European Union. The Chinese sports utility maker has an initial production quota of 2,000 vehicles a year, with output, though, rising to 50,000 annually by 2014. The car plant, owned by Great Wall Motors and Bulgaria's Litex Motors, will initially produce vehicles aimed at the local market. Great Wall Motors officials say the aim is to gradually expand into the European markets. As Bulgaria is a member of the European Union, it is expected the project will give Great Wall Motors zero tariff access to other EU countries.
China's special envoy to the Middle East, Wu Zeke, now says Israel should accept the reconciliation between the Palestinian factions of Fatah and Hamas. The Palestinian factions signed off on a unity agreement 2 weeks ago. The Israel side has refused to endorse the unity deal, blasting Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas for allying his organization with Hamas, which the Israeli side considers a terrorist organization. Wu Zeke's comments have come following meetings with both the Israeli and Palestinian sides on Monday.
Those reports were from China Radio International, heard from 4 to 5 p.m. at 11970, and from 6 p.m. to 11 at either 9790, 6020, or 6190, or on the web at english.cri.cn. On to Radio Havana, Cuba. An Israeli human rights organization is criticizing Israel's increased imprisonment without charge or trial of Palestinians. There is a developing anti-Chavez campaign happening in Venezuela. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The Israeli non-governmental human rights organization, B'Tselem, has announced the recent increase in administrative detentions of Palestinians, noting that the legal mechanism allows imprisonment without charge or trial and based on secret evidence. In a statement released in Jerusalem, the Israeli Human Rights Organization says that the Israeli Prison Service reported in January that there are 309 Palestinians in this situation, compared to 219 cases 1 year ago. Of those currently being held, 8 have been locked up for 6 months to 1 year, 88 have been detained for 2 years, 16 Palestinians have been in prison for more than 2 to 4 years, and one Palestinian has been detained for as many as 5 years. The Israeli Human Rights Group says the practice of arresting Palestinians and keeping them locked up indefinitely is clearly illegal.
Venezuelan Minister of Communications and Information Andres Izarra has denounced a media campaign against his country and particularly President Hugo Chavez aimed at undermining the people's confidence in the South American leader. In statements to Venezolana de Televisión channel, the minister referred to rumors spread in the local and foreign media of the past few days about Chavez's health. He also criticized CNN's Spanish-language news network for being the main promoter of the campaign against the Venezuelan president. The Venezuelan minister went on to say that right-wing newspapers such as Miami's New Herald, Bogotá's El Tiempo, and Madrid's El País have all backed the CNN story using communications to pursue their political goals. Chavez himself forestalled those rumors on Tuesday by announcing that he will undergo another operation as part of ongoing cancer treatment after his Cuban doctors detected a lesion in the pelvic region where he had a cancerous tumor removed last year. Minister Izarra said that the only true fact in the rumors is that Chavez traveled to Cuba over the weekend for a medical checkup. He said that the media campaign seeks to damage Chavez's image and his possibility to participate in the October 7th presidential elections. Finally, Minister Izarra called on the Venezuelan people to preserve national unity and expressed his confidence that Chavez will be victorious in this new struggle.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba, heard from 2 p.m. to 3 at 11760, and from 4 to 11 p.m. at either 6060, 6010, or 6000. Also streaming on the web from 4 to 11 p.m. at www.radiohc.cu, and now podcasting at World Radio Network, which is wrn.org. Next, Spanish National Radio. Last Sunday in Spain, up to 500,000 people protested against reforms to the labor market and cuts to social programs. This week saw students in Valencia who were protesting education cuts being beaten by riot squads. Spanish National Radio.
Hundreds of thousands of people protested across Spain on Sunday against reforms to the labour market they fear will destroy workers' rights and spending cuts they say are destroying the welfare state. Organisers, including the country's two largest unions, workers' commissions and UGT, said as many as 500,000 people joined the protest in 57 towns and cities, although Spanish police gave no official estimate. In Madrid, one of the largest protests since the economic crisis began almost 5 years ago, filled the wide boulevards from the Atocha train station up to the central Sol Square with loud but peaceful marchers of all ages. Spain's new Conservative Popular Party government began its four-year term in December with tax hikes and spending cuts worth around 15 billion euros, and must cut another 40 billion to meet tough deficit targets set by the European Union. It has also passed reforms in the financial sector, which force banks to recognise property sector losses, and the labour market, which grants companies greater hiring and firing power in an effort to appease nervous markets. The Eurozone's fourth largest economy has been in the eye of the storm of the debt crisis since the socialist government racked up one of the bloc's largest budget deficits, leaving investors concerned it had lost control of its finances. The Conservative Party says its own labour market reform, passed on February the 10th, will give struggling companies more room to recover from the economic crisis and create jobs in a country where almost half of all young people are unemployed. The new reform has abolished severance pay worth 45 days for each year worked, a legal requirement that companies said made it prohibitively expensive to reduce the workforce in times of economic difficulties. And it allows employees to be sacked for missing work, even when the absences are justified. Spain has the highest unemployment rate in the developed world at 23%, and many Spaniards fear granting businesses greater powers to lay off workers will prompt a wave of redundancies and new contracts without rights.
While in London, the Spanish Prime Minister spoke of the police reaction to student protesters in Valencia, saying that is not Spain's image. Baton-wielding riot squads are said to have charged, beaten and arrested up to 21 demonstrators, some of them minors, during a rally yesterday against cuts in education in the region. Today, thousands in Valencia have again gathered to protest against the police brutality and the education cuts. The regional government of Valencia has ordered an investigation to determine whether or not the police response was excessive.
The regional government has called for calm as videos of students bleeding, dragged and beaten by riot police have sparked more protests. Similar skirmishes broke out in Valencia a week ago. The national police has sent an additional 150 reinforcements to the city.
Parents, teachers and students plan further protests. In London, the Prime Minister said, if everyone behaves with moderation and common sense, this kind of thing won't be repeated.
Those reports were from Spanish National Radio, heard from 4 to 5 p.m. at 5970, and podcasting at www.rtve.es. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or would like to make a donation for production cost of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. I'm grateful for any donations. We will conclude with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. An analysis of the latest Greek bailout. Can Greece ever repay its growing debts, and can it stay in the Eurozone? Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
After months of tense negotiations, Greece has once again been brought back from the brink of default, after a last-minute bailout was agreed by EU leaders on Monday. The 130 million euro bailout comes in exchange for severe austerity measures and is subject to strict conditions. But as Nathan Morley reports from Brussels, doubts remain about Athens' ability to repay its debts and even stay in the Eurozone.
Should we book our hotel rooms now for the next bailout in 3 months and enjoy the discount? That's one of the many running jokes amongst foreign journalists that have been camped here in Brussels for the past week. But joking aside, it's become increasingly evident after this latest bailout that the discussion about the possibility of Greece eventually exiting the Eurozone is no longer spoken in whispers or behind closed doors. It appears that everybody here is doing it.
They are talking about it at a very high level, but, you know, I'm sure the captain of the Titanic wasn't talking about, the fire drill as he left Southampton on that fateful voyage, you know.
That's Professor Michael Smith, the president of the European Economic and Social Committee. He, like many others here, has little confidence in Greece's ability to deliver on the latest austerity measures, and argues that the prospect of an eventual default is certain.
It's another step along the road to the inevitable. I've thought this for some time, that Greece will default 100% within the next 12 months, for sure. because on the basis of everything I know, there is no way that Greece even will never be able to get itself out from under this debt mountain. Remember, this is all about buying some time for European financial institutions to deleverage themselves and to reduce their exposure, not just to Greek sovereign debt, but the credit default swaps that go with it.
That gloomy diagnosis was followed just hours later by the news that the credit agency Fitch had further downgraded Greece's rating from CCC to C, or junk status. However, Hans Martens, who heads the European Policy Centre, says that we should not pay attention to agencies because, in his opinion, their influence is faltering.
Well, I don't think that they've been giving investors the good advice that they should do, because I think they made a lot of mistakes in the US. I think they got the European situation wrong as well. It seems that nobody really listens to them anymore. We've had these downgrades of particular European countries, you know, around Christmas, New Year, and in the beginning of the New Year, but apparently the markets are not listening. So I don't think they do a lot of damage anymore, but I think actually they need to clean up their, you know, their own act very much, have a set of ethical rules and so on, and basically redefine themselves, because I think they've been compromising their own position quite heavily.
Furthermore, Europe should stick with Greece, because there is light at the end of the tunnel. That's the message of Indemit Gill, the chief economist for Europe and Central Asia at the World Bank. He thinks it's Greece's ability to actually deliver on promised austerity measures that analysts will be watching, and any thoughts of Athens abandoning the euro should be dismissed.
If you see clear indications of structural reforms, I am confident that other countries in Europe will come to their help. So you don't actually have to do this overnight. You will get the time to actually do this well. But this is a special feature of Europe, and the Greeks are fortunate that they are part of Europe in that sense. Is the euro the cause of problems in southern Europe? You know, and my answer is no. You have to change your economic structures rather than your currency.
However, getting the European economy back on track is not all about bailouts and quick fixes. It's about leadership and direction, according to Simon Tilford, the chief economist at the Centre for European Reform. He thinks the problem is made far worse because of the differences of opinion within the EU about how the crisis started, and more importantly, about what to do next.
Well, clearly the strategy towards Greece has failed. So those, the credit account that have pushed fiscal austerity as a pretty much as a panacea for everything, have failed in Greece. That explains the almost orchestrated camp to portray Greeks as hopelessly venal and incompetent and uniquely awful. Because if they're not, if they're anything but that, then that calls into question the strategy, which is still in place across Europe as a whole. There isn't actually that much difference between Portugal and Greece, and Spain could easily end up where Portugal is.
Simon Tilford thinks the main point of focus should be the possibility that more rescue money for Greece will be needed.
The latest package shows quite clearly that Greece is insolvent. Under any realistic assumptions for economic growth, for the Greek authorities' ability to push through reforms, for everything, it's insolvent. There's absolutely no way the Greek economy can service anywhere near the levels of debt that are foreseen under this latest deal. So this will be revisited. There's absolutely no doubt about this. It'll be a matter of months.
Nathan Morley, DW, Brussels.
That analysis was from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, mediacenter.dw-world.de. All the times I've announced are for Pacific Standard Time, so adjust them to your time zone. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people to listen to international broadcast using a shortwave radio at home. It's far simpler than you might think. However, if you use the internet, listening globally is also quite easy. See the links at this program's website. Every Friday morning, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find internet links for international broadcasters, make a safe donation through PayPal, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report is free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.